You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Bernie Williams has played on baseball's biggest stage, and he's played guitar on stage alongside Bruce Springsteen. And that probably makes him the ideal person to write a book about what he argues is a deep connection between baseball and music. And that's exactly what he's done in Rhythms of the Game, The Link Between Musical and Athletic Performance. It's co-authored with Dave Gluck and Bob Thompson and has a foreword by Paul Simon. Bernie Williams was on our show in June to discuss it, and listeners told us how much they enjoyed our conversation, so we're replaying it for you on this Labor Day show. I began by asking him, when you were growing up in Puerto Rico, which came first, the music or baseball?
Well, they both came around the same time when I was about 8 years old. My mother was instigating my father to have us play an athletic, play, you know, an athletic thing on the field because we were just watching too much TV on the couch and said, these kids have to go out and do something. And the guitar and the music connection came from my father. He was a merchant marine, and from one of his trips in, he brought a Spanish guitar from Spain. And I asked him about 8 years old if he could teach me how to play a couple of chords. That's when I made my connection.
An acoustic guitar, a classic guitar.
Yes.
So did you plan to pursue a career in music after baseball? Or I'm sure when you were a kid, you had no idea that you would have such a long career in baseball, even make it to the major leagues.
Absolutely. I was fortunate enough to have great parents that were very supportive of our activities. But they were more geared towards having us go to college and have this, you know, sort of normal 4 or 5 year stint and be a professional in whatever profession. For me, oddly enough, you know, the opportunity to play in the minor leagues came when I was a junior in high school. And by the way, I went to this performing arts high school in San Juan, Puerto Rico, which, you know, sort of get me that segue into music, you know, while I was in high school.
And what kind of music in those days?
They really took a lot of emphasis in playing and teaching the classical, you know, sort of the classical school.
So you were going to be a Segovia?
That was one of my, you know, sort of guys that I looked up to, him and John Williams and Julian Bream and Manuel Barruecos and the Romero brothers. I listened to all of them when I was a kid.
How often could you play music while you were playing with the Yankees? And I've always wondered about how anybody could play a guitar after he's been hit on the knuckles by a pitch. Luckily, you weren't a catcher.
Yes, I was fortunate enough to not have any career-threatening or hand, you know, injuries that would, like, threaten my playing ability over the years. I never really thought about that. And it's really pretty surprising because, you know, you get to play and hit and throw and catch and dive for balls. The possibility of injury is really, it's really big. But I definitely had an opportunity to play because there was a lot of dead time between games and between practices, so it was great.
But you're probably playing for fun. You don't have to be as competitive to enjoy playing music as you do to be successful as a baseball player.
Yes, music was. I did not realize how important music was in my life until I got older. My last 2 or 3 years in baseball, I realized that the music has always been a part of my life, and playing on it constantly. I had this desire to learn more and more about music, even while I was playing baseball. So it was a great segue into this.
My guest is Bernie Williams, who's written with the help of Dave Gluck and Bob Thompson a book called Rhythms of the Game, The Link Between Musical and Athletic Performance. So I've never heard of a link between music and athletic performance. I've heard about music and mathematics and any number of other arts. What are the links that you see?
Well, I think the major link that we see and that we talk about in the book is the performance aspect. You know, whether it's a player performing on the field, you know, facing a guy throwing 95 miles an hour, or a person, a musician performing in Carnegie Hall, you know, under all that pressure. It's about the performance and how do you access, you know, your experiences and your preparation and to put it to work when it really counts.
So what was scarier, playing in an important game or playing before a concert audience in Carnegie Hall?
Well, to me, you know, after 16 years of playing with the Yankees, you know, I always got the jitters, you know, the first day of the season and then playing in the postseason. You get different times at different points of the game that you get a little bit of that nervousness. But when I started playing music, however, it was a little bit more nerve-wracking because I never really had the opportunity to do it that often.
There's another thing. You can strike out twice in a game and still be the hero of the game. You hit a couple of bad notes and you really screwed up in a performance.
Yeah, that is true. And the other aspect that I do find interesting is the fact that in baseball or any athletic performance, you can get away with going and doing your business on the field and not have to interact in any way, shape, or form with the audience or with the fans watching. As a musician, the way that I look at it, you know, I have to make myself vulnerable and I have to connect with the listening audience to make that great connection so they can, you know, tell, you know, where I'm coming from as far as my music is concerned. So that was a little challenging.
You have a chapter in the book in which you discuss the work of Charles Ives and he was actually interested in the rhythms of baseball. I know he was interested in almost everything else that had to do with music.
Yeah, I believe is the part that he talks about the rhythms of, you know, when you do the double play and things like that. Absolutely. I mean, there is certainly a great link between the rhythm and the way that I play the game. In my particular case, it was all about rhythm and great timing.
And in the book, you say that, and I'm quoting, the highest level of musical nuance can be found in the interaction between pitcher and batter. Do you mean that in the sense that every player has his own rhythm?
Well, I think that you have to feed off the rhythm of the pitcher because in baseball, everything starts, you know, nothing starts until the pitcher gets his movement, his windup up.
And some pitchers are very quick. They just throw the ball, get it back, throw the ball again. Others wander around on the mound, fix their hat. Which do you prefer?
Well, there's actually the ones in between, that the ones that are aware of the rhythm patterns and that they would want to throw you off the rhythm and try to throw you off balance with their setup and with their movements. You just have to watch them. And, you know, if they try to quick pitch you, you got to step off and call timeout. Not too many times, though, but you got to do something, though.
You called Pedro Martinez a composer, and you said that he may have been your arch nemesis. So he could play you like a fiddle? I mean, I know he said he asked, who's your daddy? But I didn't know that he also was doing musical stuff.
I would say that to this date, you know, I will always say that he was probably the hardest pitcher that I had to face on the field. And, you know, he was kind of like a composer because he was just almost like writing a script. You know, he would never pitch anybody the same way twice during the course of a game. And he'll have a great memory of what to do in certain situations. He relied on his pinpoint control. And when he was on, even if you were an opposing batter playing, you know, on the other team, you had to admire his ability to get people out.
Because you never knew where the pitch was going to come.
Well, yeah, and you never knew what kind of speed, what kind of location, and, you know, the rotation. And he had all those weapons on his arsenal, and he could use them at any time at will.
There were rumors in 1998 that you might sign with the Boston Red Sox. Were you ever close to doing that?
Yeah, I was very close. I remember the time after the 98 season that I was becoming a free agent. So I figure I would, you know, deserve an opportunity to see what's out there. And I had offers from Arizona, the Diamondbacks. I had an offer from I believe the Tigers, and one of the offers also was from the Red Sox. And I was, I think, you know, out of all of those, I think it was probably very attractive to them to sort of snatch one of the beloved Yankees. And but at the end of the day, I remain a Yankee, and that was a great decision for me.
Despite the fact that George Steinbrenner could be a pain in the butt?
Well, he could, but you cannot fault him because of the fact that he wanted a winner, and he invested a lot of time and effort and resources and money on that team, and he was very demanding. So, I mean, you have to play hard for the man.
You were 15 when you signed your first contract?
I was 15, yes.
Coming here from Puerto Rico. Had you been here before?
Yeah, on and off, and different very small, limited time opportunities, you know, to play basketball. At one point when I was 13, I went to Louisiana. And then I have relatives in East Chicago, Indiana as well.
So you played other sports, basketball. You also ran track. And supposedly, from what I hear, you were an excellent 400-meter dash runner.
Yeah, yeah. In my age bracket, which was at the time 13, 14-year-old, runners, I recorded the second best time in the nation in 400 meters. And I heard that I was offered a scholarship to go to UCLA to run track. And they kept it under the wraps because my parents wouldn't want to let me get out of Puerto Rico that young. So,
is there music to running as well?
Absolutely. There's great rhythm in running and pacing yourself. There's this link between your breathing and the steps you take. And, you know, when I used to run, I used to have the ability to sort of take myself mentally out, you know, out of my body and just sort of experience, you know, once you get into a point that you're all warmed up and before you start getting tired, it's just the greatest time because your body's in motion, you got your breathing right, you time it with your every step you take, and it's just one of the greatest feelings in the world.
But does that speed translate into a baseball skill? Because there are very fast runners, but they're not necessarily the best base stealers, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you can utilize all the aspect of the music and the rhythm and the notes and the concentration and the focus on different aspects of the game. And, depending on your ability to, you know, to access all that information, you can do, you know, certain things. And you are born with certain abilities that you can, you know, translate into whatever you do. It's some things you may not be as good.
How did you learn to hit so well from both sides of the plate? Was that something you did from the start?
No, as a matter of fact, I started hitting from the left side of the plate on my second year in professional baseball. And I think my brother has a little bit to do with my success because I used to play wiffle ball with him from the left side. You know, my first year being a professional baseball player, I came back home and I was still living at home with my parents. And my brother was there, and he encouraged me to hit from the left side, you know, mostly because he said, no, you're a professional now. You got to hit from the left side now to give me a fair, level playing field. So after that, I said, well, maybe I should try it. And I asked one of the managers in the minor leagues, and they checked with the front office, and they say, well, you could try it. And definitely one of the best decisions that I've ever made in my career.
But you can't, it's not the same stance, not the same approach. You're seeing pitches totally differently. Doesn't that mess with your head?
No, actually, you try to mimic your swing as much as you can from the left side as I would from the right side. I consider myself to have a little bit more power from the right side since it's my natural side, and I really have to work very hard at the left side to make it work, you know, in the big leagues.
My guest is Bernie Williams. He's written a book called Rhythms of the Game with the help of Dave Gluck and Bob Thompson. More about those guys in just a moment. It's subtitled The Link Between Musical and Athletic Performance, and it's published by Hal Leonard Books. We'll continue our conversation after this. That's Bernie Williams on guitar. He was on our show in June to discuss his book Rhythms of the Game, The Link Between Musical and Athletic Performance, which was written with the help of Dave Gluck and Bob Thompson and has a foreword by Paul Simon, who's a pretty good guitarist in his own right. I began the second half of our conversation by pointing out that Dave Gluck is a drummer and Bob Thompson is a producer, and I asked Bernie Williams, did you meet them on the musical side of your career?
Yes, I actually met them at the SUNY, at the University of New York, at Purchase, at the Conservatory of Music. I was, right after I stopped playing, I was looking for schools around my area that I could go to, I guess, further my studies in music and, I guess, take it from, you know, what I was doing after, you know, from my high school years. And, you know, I went to SUNY Purchase. And
this is 2006?
This is probably a couple of years after that. I would say probably maybe 2008, maybe 2007, later that time.
Now, you never retired from baseball. So were you still thinking that you might return?
I never did. And in those years, I did have, you know, even more prevalent in my head, you know, just the thought of returning to the game. I then saw the opportunity of doing something that I, you know, kind of like start over again on something that totally different, you know, in a way. So I said, you know, why there's not a lot of people that have an opportunity to reinvent themselves, you know, in a lifetime and doing something completely different. So I just went for it.
So you went to school to improve your musical musicianship,
yes,
your musical abilities.
Yes, I took, you know, some courses there. And within that time, I think one of the most important courses that I took was the studio composition. It took about two semesters with Dave Gluck. And the important thing about this connection is the fact that, you know, half of the class we spent talking about, you know, the music part of, you know, what we were supposed to be doing. And the rest was conversations about, you know, basically what the book is about, you know, the parallel mindsets, you know, how do you connect the dots and how do you access the information on your brain to be able to perform at your peak. And we talk a lot about, you know, the being in the zone and not dwelling on your mistakes and overcoming adversity, the discipline, the work ethic. And at some point, you know, within our course, you know, we said, well, why don't we just write a book about this? And that's basically the idea behind it.
Well, you talk about being in the zone when things are going well. Ball players tell me that the ball looks like a grapefruit, and when you're not doing well, it looks like an aspirin.
Yes.
Have you ever any thought about why that is? We just recently saw on the Mets Jason Bay go through probably the worst slump in his career, and then suddenly he broke out, and for a little while he was getting two or three hits every game.
Yeah, it is one of those mysteries of life, as I could understand it. I think that players, it doesn't matter how good you are, you will always go through peaks and valleys. I think the difference between the good players and the great players is the amount of time that they spend in those valleys. And that you try to, you know, sort of trick yourself in a way of thinking, you know, you've done this before, you got the preparation, you know, you have, you know, the mindset, the positive mindset, and try to keep it as positive as you can. But you certainly are going to go through those times, and you cannot let them get you so down that you can't come back.
A listener, Charles, left this comment on our show page. He said, I think the parallel between music and sports has to do with the state of flow, that is, being in a zone or a state of mindful attention while you're playing.
Yeah, you agree? I totally agree. And I think, you know, one of the things that we do talk about in the book is the fact that we have to find a way to access, you know, that state of mind and, you know, to try to be there as much as we can.
I'm sure you wish you could bottle it sometimes.
Oh,
like the
goodness.
Matrix moment you talk about in the book.
I would be the zillionaire if I could do that. But I think the book just gives certain ideas and certain concepts that I, from my experience, I was able to, you know, come up with.
Well, you're lucky if it comes up at the right time. You were probably in the zone for the 1996 American League Championship Series, where you batted 474 with two homers, and you were named the ALCS MVP.
It was just a great time, and to be in the zone at that moment. I mean, if you choose any time to be in that state of mind, you know, when you have everything going together, I definitely the postseason when you have the most exposure and when the game is are even more meaningful. You know, those are the times that you want to do good.
And you say that brainwaves actually slow down during those moments?
Well, I think the whole game slows down because you have...
So a 99-mile-per-hour fastball looks like it's coming in at 60 miles an hour?
It just looks like you're lightning fast with your hands, and you can allow yourself, you know, the luxury to wait and see the rotation and see the seams of the ball and see the location, because you know that at any moment, you know, in a split second, you can react and put that bat, you know, in the good part of the ball. I mean, you put that ball in the good part of the bat and have a great swing. A lot of it has to do with your confidence about it, too.
And when you see the rotation, you can tell whether this is going to be a fastball, a slider, or a curveball?
Yeah, you can see rotation will give you an indication of where the ball is going to go. You can see the rotation for the curveball. You can see the non-rotation, I guess, for that matter, for the knuckleball. You can see the, you know, four-seam sort of rotation for the fastball or the sinker. And I know that there are players like Ted Williams that could actually focus on the arm angle and the wrist angle on the pitcher, and he would probably pick it up even before I could. But I was just blessed with really quick hands, so I was able to make the adjustment.
And then there are pitchers who tip off what they're going to throw, but some of the great ones, it doesn't really matter.
Yes, you know, I think...
Greg Maddux, I think, yeah. They say you could tell what he was going to throw, and he still got you out.
Yeah, more important, you know, I guess for the New York fans and the Yankee fans is the fact that Mariano Rivera has been able to dominate more than one generation
everybody
of players, and everybody knows that he's going to throw that cutter. They still can't hit it.
At the old-timers game at Yankee Stadium this past Sunday, you clearly received the loudest applause from the fans. That must have meant a lot to you.
That was great. It was my first old-timers day. As an old-timer, I guess.
You think of yourself as an old-timer?
I really don't, you know.
You look like you're in good shape.
There was actually a great quote, you know, from when I was playing with Mr. Bruce Springsteen at the Joe Torre Safe at Home Foundation dinner. He said, you may be old for baseball, but you are a spring chicken for rock and roll. So I was like, I take that as a compliment.
Well, the Rolling Stones are around 70 now. So.
And they're still rolling.
But that you do know that at a certain age, I don't know why, players just go into decline. They just saw the statistics on Derek Jeter at 37 compared to other players at 37, and something happens around 37, unless you're a pitcher.
Yeah, I do. I think this is just a natural course of events. I think you should expect, you know, certain decline in players' skill level. I think, you know, obviously the reflex are not the same. I think, you know, the one thing that you can do to offset that is, you know, is your experience. You know, there's no substitute for that, you know, and you can overcome, you know, some of those shortcomings, you know, from your decline in your skill level with the experience that you have acquired from the game.
Well, you played with Springsteen, which is rock and roll, but I think of you as a kind of a Latin jazz player.
Well, I think of myself as, you know, try to sort of get this concept in my head as a musician that hopefully will be able to play all kinds of music. I think the musician that I want to be is one that would be able to hang with, Yo-Yo Ma and play a tune, or maybe just go with the Pat Metheny and play a duet, and maybe go with Bruce Springsteen or James Taylor and play, because music is music, and whether it's classical or jazz, blues, or rock, you know, if it's well made, you know, I want to be in it.
And you want to compose, because the music we came back with after the break was one of your compositions moving forward.
Yes, and the interesting thing about that piece was that it was born out of a homework assignment from one of my classes, studio composition classes at SUNY Purchase. I talked with Dave Gluck, who was at the time my teacher, still my teacher, and we talked about, you know, writing a song to work something with the negative rhythms, you know, that the see if you can fill the space with certain notes and certain rhythm patterns. And that's how Moving Forward came to fruition. It was a really interesting process to be able to create music and to have the melodies that are in my head to sort of put them together in a way that are, you know, pleasing to the listener. And I guess it gives me great satisfaction to do that.
And you've released two CDs so far?
Two CDs. The first one is called The Journey Within. And this last one, which was about 2.5 years ago, it's called Moving Forward. And one good thing about this last CD was the fact that it was nominated for a Latin Grammy in the category of Best Instrumental Pop Music. So just to be nominated, it was definitely a great treat. And I guess it gives me an indication that I'm doing the right thing.
Just one more question for all the Yankees fans. A lot of people were very sad when they tore down Yankee Stadium, the house that Ruth built. What's your feelings about the new building?
I think it's a great stadium to watch a game. I, you know, had my first experience of actually taking batting practice and playing, you know, I guess a couple of innings as an old-timer there. And I, to be quite honest with you, as a player, it really reminded me of the old stadium.
I mean, they built it to pretty much the same specs.
And at some point, you know, when you kind of like start getting yourself in the game sort of atmosphere, it almost felt like I was in the old stadium. I know there's, you know, obviously, you know, structurally there's a couple of differences, but I think they did a good job, you know, trying to bring the old magic into this stadium. You know, they filled, you know, the stadium with pictures and mementos of the old stadium, and I think it's a great way, place to watch a game.
Bernie Williams wrote, with the help of Dave Gluck and Bob Thompson, a book called Rhythms of the Game, The Link Between Musical and Athletic Performance. It's published by Hal Leonard. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.